Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 19th, 2021, and a lot of topics to cover tonight. I will be getting back to my discussions of outer space travel. This will fit in nicely with some issues going on. We are now in August, which is basically the electrical month of the year, and the reason for that is Earth is passing through this region of space that I call the return current sheet. The return current sheet because of the excess current of protons in the solar wind that build up the solar capacitor. It cannot keep doing this forever, so there has to be return current sheet that completes the electric circuit of the solar system, basically. So we're passing through that right now, and it causes a number of things, including all kinds of electrical phenomena in the sky, including auroras, sprites, elves, blue lightning, tropical storms. It's the peak of the hurricane season, etc. So a lot of things related. So I'll be talking about that, but how does that relate to space travel? Well, in my early work, this is back in the early 1980s, I was in Los Angeles looking for venture capital to develop my propulsion systems based on electromagnetic conditions in the atmosphere, outer space, etc. And so it has everything to do with space travel. And then it was around 2003, I believe, I was one of the keynote speakers at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, about 1,200 people there, with a strong contingency of military scientists and engineers, some of them I met at the event, who were there just to listen to me, and the topic was electric highways to the stars. I also call it electric rivers to the stars. So in discussing the atmospheric conditions and near-Earth conditions of electricity, of all the electrical conditions, and of course you can look in my books. The weather book is probably the best book that gives a lot of detail, about 300 pages of information. So anyway, electric highways to the stars, that's what it's all about. So nature has given us a very easy way to get there. Now, imagine in the old sailing days. I'm going to make an analogy here. Imagine in the old sailing days, before they really understood sails and wind and using that for moving a boat around, there were rows. Everybody was rowing around the Mediterranean. The Roman navies and going back to the Carthaginians, etc., were rowing, and that gave them very directed power because they didn't understand sail at all. They didn't understand keels or the way we understand modern sails with the airfoil and everything. They had no clue. And then, of course, we came to the modern age of sail, but they were first square rigs where they did not have aerodynamic ability. They didn't understand the keel or how that works with the water to give you a reference frame to use an aerodynamic frame in the wind, etc. But the other mode of travel was rivers. So you would get on a river, and you would go up and down the river, and this would take you through the heart of a country relatively easily. And, of course, they used steam power. That was the early mechanism or if you were in old Egypt, they had actually sail craft that they went up and down the Nile River with. They're still using them today. But at any rate, a river was a mechanism for transporting and getting to other places. And that's why if you look along, for example, the Mississippi River, the Nile River, any river is going to have at strategic places, they're going to have cities and development because that's where the transportation would lead to and then would branch out from there over land, which was more difficult to move things. But over water, you could move very heavy loads very easily, etc. So the rivers were the main mechanism for transportation in the very early days of, for example, any country. in the United States, etc. But as we go to space travel, the rocket is similar to the people with oars. It's a mechanism for getting into low Earth orbit. It really does not work well once you get out of low Earth orbit. And so it's okay for lifting heavy loads, etc. And the electromagnetic rivers to the stars are for taking basically loads of people. And the spacecraft don't have to be heavy, etc. They can be very lightweight. And okay, so anyway, that's the main science topic. Last week, I want to direct you to my last week's show and the Power Hour, which I was the guest host on the Power Hour last Wednesday, not yesterday, a week ago Wednesday, on the would have been the 11th of August, 2 hours, and I talk about graphene oxide there, and I'll make a little mention this week that sometimes people are calling it graphene dioxide. It's a misnomer. It's not a proper term. You would use graphene dioxide if it were in a molecular form, like with a gas or, say, a liquid. H2O is a molecule. You get a lot of molecules together. You can have it in the frozen or the liquid or the gas state. But it's a molecule, so you would call it H2O water. So graphene dioxide is not a proper term because it's in a crystalline lattice. It's a repetitive structure, and so you call it graphene oxide. That's the correct chemical term. I just want to make that clear because I've heard people on the internet talking about graphene dioxide. There is no commercial, I mean, there could be a graphene structure with two oxygen atoms attached. The reason they maybe call it dioxide is because in the crystalline single-layer two-dimensional graphene structure, you insert two oxygen atoms, and that allows it to lay flat in a plane. That gives you the properties like the cellular, the cellophone. What would you call it? Like Scotch tape. It comes out in a plane or in a roll or in a flat surface. One atom thick. So graphene has very interesting properties. And specifically, I was talking about magnetic graphene oxide, which is the type they use in medicals. And so anyway, I encourage you, in fact, I insist you go back, listen to the Power Hour, the entire show. That's I believe Power Hour Nation on August 11th. I was the guest host for both hours. First and second hour. That was my main topic amongst a bunch of other topics. Okay, so with that, let's see my notes here. I'm seeing more and more agreement, people coming out from different directions, talking about graphene oxide in the world of COVID and that whole issue, where there may not have even been a COVID thing. It was just all fairy dust, graphene oxide, from the very beginning, putting it in and all about putting it in your bodies, etc. So I'm not going to repeat that on this show. I'm just pointing you to the sources than my show last week. Just a quick note on Haiti. Pray for those poor people down there. I mean, talk about a place that just gets slam dunked time after time after time. They're in the heat of the summer right now. Haiti is big, so it's not like I've lived in the Caribbean on Caribbean islands, and you have that relative cooling effect during the day, so it doesn't really get up over like 85 degrees on a tropical island in the Caribbean, for example. But on Haiti, it's big, and so the inland, it gets really hot. So anyway, Haiti has had earthquakes, tremors. Now they're having tropical storms. Oh, my goodness. Plus all the damage that's being done by the international monetary community that uses Haiti as some kind of kicking block. I don't know. But the poor people in Haiti, if you can find a mechanism for helping them. And remember the Haiti earthquake and the Clinton-Bush Foundation went down there, collected all this money and kept it. Did not give it to the Haitian people. I mean, these people just get raked over the coals time and time again. there should be a special international effort to help the people in Haiti. It's just, I don't know, it's just unbelievable. So just if you can find a way to help the people in Haiti, just do something, spend a little attention there. Also, I'm kind of losing my voice. I hope I get through this show. Remember that tomorrow night at midnight, the 10% sale ends on my webpage, especially for the big stuff, the MR5. It's across the board. There's about a 10% sale. And the 10% coupon code, JMCC, four letters, J, M as in Mary, CC, coupon code on my webpage for the water filter stuff. And so you can go there. It's jmccwaterfilters.com. That's plural. Waterfilters, plural, .com. jmccwaterfilters.com. There's a 10% sale on everything on my webpage. And at checkout, there's a place to put in a coupon code, JMCC, for an additional 10% off. And all that's going away tomorrow night because we are busy because of the MR5 whole house water filter. I recommend that you get one of these for your house. It's going to be harder and harder to get these in the future as people wake up all over the place and our lead times grow. There's currently about a 30-day lead time on us shipping out because we're very busy. That's just the bottom line, and it's probably going to get worse as more and more people wake up to getting these. So right now you can get it on sale, relatively short lead time, about a month, and have one of these installed within about a month. You could have it installed in your house. It's about a four-hour job for a plumber. I highly recommend a plumber. We have people writing in, well, what is this thing for? Well, if you don't know what it's for, don't try and install it. Please get a plumber. It's about a four-hour job. They install this thing, and you have filtered water for your entire house, hot and cold water, for the shower, for the sink, in the bathroom, for the kitchen sink, everything, for the water, for the dog, including, you know. But the biggest place where people get a blast of chemicals from the water is in the shower. That's why you need a whole house water filter. And no, those little stupid things you buy at the big box store or wherever, you know, a little screw-on thing on your shower, those things don't work. Don't waste your money. Don't be fooled into thinking that's somehow filtering water at your shower or the little thing you screw on the sink at it, you know. No. I sell very nice sink water filters, but it only filters the cold water. It does not filter the hot water. So you're left with, you know, if you're washing food or you're washing meat in the sink and then you're cooking it, or if you're taking hot water for making tea or coffee, that's not filtered. With the whole house, the MR5 whole house water filter, everything in the house is filtered. And it's, I'll tell you, with what's in today's water, the PFAS chemicals, very bad if women are pregnant or nursing. You got to get that PFAS chemical out of the water. And the whole house water filters do that. Not to mention all of the other things. If you live in a remote area, you probably have arsenic and glyphosate and agricultural runoff in your water if you're getting it from a well even. So anyway, okay, enough of that, but go to the webpage. The big sale ends tomorrow night. The would be the 20th at midnight. That sale is coming down, and the coupon code will end. So go there now, jmccwaterfilters.com. You can also get there if you're used to going to my jmccanyscience.com webpage. jmccsci.com is the short URL. There's a link up there you can click on. It says JMCC Water Filters. Click on that. You will go to the new sales page. It's the very nice, modern, everything, very easy to use. And I encourage you to get yourself the whole house water filter, MR5. Okay. So enough of that. So let's get back to space travel. Space travel, there's you know, a lot of misconceptions. I have to raise my take my hat off to the people with money. You have Bezos trying to do things. Musk, of course, is very involved in space. Richard Branson, and a lot of other people, Bigelow Space. There's a lot of private companies that have been out there for a long time with efforts in space. There are private companies now contracting Musk to put a landing device on the moon, a data gathering device. So it's happening. Private space is happening. NASA is being pushed out of the picture more and more, and for good reason. They've spent 60, 70 years and $1 trillion doing nothing, basically, relative to what should be done. I find it interesting that when you see NASA and they're going into space, they have all this equipment and helmets and everything, and Richard Branson or Bezos goes into space, they're wearing like a jumpsuit, no helmet, no oxygen. It's like getting into a jet plane going up into space and coming back down. It's controlled atmosphere and everything. So what we've been seeing from NASA for decades is a bunch of baloney. It's just, how complicated can they make it to make you think that you cannot go into space? Boy, I'll tell you. So anyway, I'll be talking about space travel. I have my own private space program. One aspect of that, you can see it on my webpage, it's been posted there, is the Space Hotel Launch System. And you can see the artist's conception there. I'm moving ahead with that in various directions. Very important, where you get literally tens of thousands of people up in a space hotel at one time, artificial gravity, Earth environment, all of the other things, protection from micrometeorites, and there's a lot more that goes with that. So anyway, hopefully I'll be going there and developing that program along with all of the other stuff. I guess there's too much to even announce here. So back to the idea of, first of all, I'm going to be talking about lightning and electrical activity. Primarily, there's a term that's used for this, electricity in the atmosphere, in low Earth orbit, etc., and transient luminous events, they're called. So that sprites, elves, lightning, regular lightning, tropospheric lightning, above the clouds lightning, auroras is another classification of atmospheric electricity. Water in the upper atmosphere, where does that come from? It's all electrical related. This is my specialty. This is what I've been working on for literally 40 years since I was at Cornell University. And, of course, I was right about everything I was talking about there and more, and then just through the decades have developed this whole theoretical structure on how the world and the universe really work. So I'll be talking about the atmospheric electricity. And remember that Atlantis was ripe with atmospheric electricity. It was in the South China Sea, where there is still a South China Sea anomaly, an electrical anomaly, so that when spacecraft pass over that, they actually shut down their communications because it does not work when it's above the South China Sea for a very good reason. And I will be talking about that. So, and then this leads into the electric rivers, electric highways to the stars, electromagnetic propulsion systems. But first of all, just going to interject something a little bit here. Now, there have been many recent collisions or near collisions in outer space because of the Starlink system. Thousands of satellites up there, and of course, space junk is up there, millions of pieces, bolts, nuts, everything in the world, doors off of spacecraft, shrouds. All of this stuff that came off and is all over space, it's just a junkyard up there, thanks to NASA primarily, the Russian space program, etc. But now the satellites are in organized patterns, and there's a lot of very near misses, and there are computers that keep track of all of this stuff. But just a week ago, it was a piece of a Russian spacecraft, a discarded piece, which hit a Chinese satellite. Now, I've talked before about kinetic energy weapons in outer space, basically a shotgun in outer space. So if you could come up to something and approach it in the opposite orbital direction, then you could have potentially 34,000 mile an hour bullets. And they could be just little teeny like BBs, you know, out of a shot, literally out of a shotgun. And if one of those hit a spacecraft, one of our critical spacecraft, etc., then, I mean, it'd be all over. That thing would, it would just blow it to pieces. And there's nothing you could do to stop this. So anyway, I mean, at least there's no remedies right now. There's nothing up there that's going to remedy this situation. And so anyway, collisions in outer space are going to become more common as time goes on. I see that Jeff Bezos is suing NASA. You know, I didn't even really read it, but I suspect it is because he's giving lower bids than Elon Musk, and Musk is getting the contract. So it never ends. You know, there people are taking their petty baloney up into outer space, you know, that... the point of my book, The Diamond Principle, which came from, what was it, 2010, I think, was released, The Diamond Principle, it said that the human race is not ready for outer space. It's just not ready. Let's put it that way, with all the bickering and everything else. Outer space should be the final frontier. And we're taking the attitude kind of like the Old West, you know, kill off all the buffalo, kill off all the Indians, you know, take all the resources, fight over the gold that's out there, you know, profiteer, do whatever it takes to make a dollar in outer space. And, you know, the first person there gets to take whatever he wants. And that's what's going on. So it's the human race is not ready for outer space. Let me just tell you that. But anyway, well, enough of that, but I'm going to turn my attention to this extremely important, very timely topic of transient luminous events, TLEs they are called, and there's a lot of them, and I have a photo which shows a few of them, but because a lot of people listen to this on shortwave, they're not going to have access to my webpage where they're going to see a very nice picture of this. So I'm going to try and describe this, and so you can have a mental picture. Now, if you go back to the 1920s and 30s, where there was radio, and the family would sit around the radio on like a Saturday night and listen to a radio program. Now, of course, it's all Hollywood, you know, computerized, whiz-bang explosion, giant things blowing up, and monsters hitting each other. You know, and it's all fabricated. But back in the 30s and 20s, you had people who could catch the people's attention. But my point is that the audience had to use their imagination. And if you don't believe that, just look at some of the stories like Orson Welles with his, remember the Mars, the aliens were attacking Earth. You had people jumping out of windows. They believed it. They believed that there was actually a Martian attack on planet Earth. But at any rate, I'm going to have you use your imagination now. And if you hear a little noise in the background, I'm not in my lovely, pristine studio tonight. And so a little bit of maybe background noise or whatever, but that's life in the big city. Okay, so let me set the stage for this, and I'll go through some of my work showing where all this electrical energy comes from. The sun has an excess current of protons in the solar wind. This creates a capacitor. There's a return current sheet. I talked about this, where the return current sheet comes back. Earth passes through that region in the month of August, approximately, because these are like big snakes, and they move around in outer space, big like snake-like currents. And so it's at different times and different effects and different densities, etc. But at any rate, so August, that's one of the contributing factors to auroras. August is aurora month. It's the peak tornado month. It's the peak hurricane month. And many other electrical phenomena. Now you're having also the transluminous events, which are occurring around the world. There was a great video of one of these on spaceweather.com. It was yesterday, And the guy was out in the middle of the Sonora Desert, I think it was. And I've been there. I'll tell you, it's big and dark. And so you can see all the stars. If it's possible to see a star with the naked eye, that's the place, one of the places on the planet where you can do it. Yeah, so anyway, he was filming off in the distance, and he was seeing basically it's called blue lightning, but it comes up out of the top of the clouds and shoots upwards. It's kind of like flares upwards. And so I'm going to use a garden hose and some other analogies here, like chia pet. Remember the chia pet? It's this little clay thing, and you soak it in water. You put water inside. It actually has water inside, which kind of filters out. And then you spread this kind of paste of chia, or is it chia seeds? I forget how you pronounce that. But anyway, and then they sprout out, and it grows like this little animal. Very cute little thing, but they're called a chia pet or chia pet. But one of the effects of the electron bursts, which happen above thunderstorms, looks like a chia pet. So anyway, and it happens to be, by the way, an electron-positron reaction. So what we're seeing above the thunderstorms up in upper in the stratosphere and above is electrical events that are connecting basically all the way out into outer space. And so some of these look like a garden hose. Like, remember those adapters? You put it on a garden hose, and it's got a head on there that turns, and one is like a normal, very fine spray. There's another one that's more like a, you know, you would use to water your garden with or your flowers. There's another one that's like a pulse. It's like something you might wash the wheels on your car. So there's all of these different sprays that come out of this rotating head that goes on the garden hose. So anyway, a lot of these transient effects above the cloud tops look like this. But here's the point. No one ever imagined through this concept that the electricity in the clouds is somehow created within the clouds. An absolutely absurd idea that has no basis in electromagnetic theory or in electricity or electricity and magnetism. It just doesn't make any sense. And the reason is, if you created a voltage within a cloud system, if it were going to discharge, it would discharge within the cloud. So why is electricity shooting out of the battery? It doesn't make any sense at all. Only a complete idiot would say something like this, but the entire scientific community is saying it. So I guess that tautology would imply that the entire scientific community is filled with a bunch of idiots, which is true. So you have weathermen, you have geologists, you have volcanologists, you have all of these fields where the people have no clue about basic electronics. And let me just give you an example. You go to the store and you buy the little AA or AAA battery or C or D cell for your flashlight. And you bring it home and you set it on the table. There is internal discharge going on within that battery. In fact, any battery that you buy for your car, for whatever battery that you buy, if it's for your Tesla automobile, etc., it's going to be internally discharging. And what that means is that voltage is built up in there, wants to move. It's fighting. It's being held back from moving artificially. And so it wants to discharge. And so it's going to do that slowly because there's no such thing as infinite resistivity. Okay, so anyway, the point is the discharge is not going to occur from the positive end and the negative end, is going to happen internally. So now we have clouds that are thunderstorm clouds or just regular clouds that have electricity shooting out the bottom down to the ground and then shooting up the top out to outer space. Where's the circuit? There ain't none. If you look at traditional concepts that the electricity is somehow formed by, and it's, you look in a textbook all the way up to the university graduate level, they say that the electricity that forms lightning comes from tumultuous activity inside the cloud, or they'll say that tornadoes happen because cloud systems rub against each other and cause this spinning action. Absolutely bonkers, absurd. You know, it has nothing to do with reality. And even, you know, I've been talking about these kind of things for 40 years now. And the scientific community still is just like in la-la land. They're still floating around pretending that electricity in the atmosphere doesn't exist, that electricity in outer space doesn't exist, that it's just magnetic effects. And let me tell you something about magnetism. Magnetism does not exist on its own. Magnetism is the result of electrical charges moving. And so you have to have electrical charges. They have to be moving. And then for them to move, something has to cause them to move. They just don't go and move on their own. Because as with anything, if they set up a magnetic field, there's energy involved in doing that. And they wouldn't keep doing this forever by themselves, because it's not a, the universe is not a, or these closed processes are not, what would you call them, perpetual motion machines. It doesn't exist. There's no free lunch. Okay, so anyway, go back to this a description of the atmosphere here. And we'll use this kind of relative to most of you probably have been in a jet plane. You go up to 35,000 feet. That's about 7 miles up. And if you're in a thunderstorm region, you can see that plane weaving around the big thunderheads, trying to get around those, and there's probably a lot of turbulence. But a big thundercloud, the airplane is at 35,000 feet. Big thunderclouds can go up to 75,000 feet, almost twice as high is the cruising altitude of a jet airliner. And so in some of the big planes, like the 777s or the 787s or the 747s, they can get up. They might cruise at 38 or even 40,000 feet. But still, the thunderstorm, the thunder clouds can be above them. Usually when you're in an airplane, you're looking down at the clouds. If you're flying, most of the thunderstorm activity is down below you. But if you're in a really big storm system, yes, they can be above you. So what we're talking about is the weather systems that are down below about, let's say, 60,000 feet. That's about 12 miles up. That is what we call the troposphere. That's the system that gives us our world weather that's down here. And it's only, if you look on a world scale, it's thinner than a piece of paper. In fact, the entire atmosphere is thinner than a piece of paper. And the mountaintops are about thinner than a tenth of a sheet of paper. That's how high things are. We think of the mountains as being really big, but on a world scale, they're not. And once again, an airplane, the highest mountains on Earth are like little under 30,000 feet. So an airplane can easily fly over those, a jet plane, without any problem. Okay, so just to give you a feeling for the extent of the troposphere, that's the weather layer that's down near the Earth. So we'll say that goes up to 60,000 feet. Could go up to as much as 75,000 feet, but on average, say about 60,000 feet. That's where the weather systems occur. Above that, we have the stratosphere. And so that takes you up to about maybe 40 miles. Then there's the mesosphere and then the ionosphere. So the ionosphere is the region that is the very thin layer right before outer space. And by the way, I should clarify that there's weather in all of these layers. It's just that the weather that we see from standing down here on the ground is what we call the troposphere. There is weather going on, and weather is simply activity in the atmosphere. That is weather. Foul weather might be raining or snowing or winds or tornadoes or hurricanes, things like that. Okay, so now looking at the structure of this, and by the way, I'm posting this picture, so if you go to my webpage or the Pictures of the Day subpage, which you get to when you go to listen to my radio show Archives Online. Every week there's a link there. And I have not been posting pictures lately. In fact, it's been a long time since I've had time to post photos on the Picture of the Day subpage, but I'm going to try and start doing that again. Okay, so the troposphere, that's where the clouds are, the lightning, and our weather systems. Now, the other layers, the stratosphere, the mesosphere, and the ionosphere, have a tremendous amount of electrical activity going on. And so this is what I'm going to describe. And interestingly enough, this all connects down to the ground. And the there's a statistic that's something like 8 million lightning bolts per day hit the Earth between clouds and ground. So this is really prolific. And then you have places like the east coast of Florida, which there are just lightning bolts constantly. It's just like raining lightning bolts on the east coast of Florida. One time I was in a jet. I was on a commercial jet and flying down the east coast of Florida from the north. And I'm not sure. I'm probably going to southern Florida, Miami, Dade County, you know, Fort Lauderdale, something like that. And we're starting to drop down, and I'm looking along. I could see the coast of Florida right down on the left-hand side. I had a left-hand window seat on the airplane, and I'm looking down, and it's just like raining lightning on the east coast of Florida. And so, by the way, that is also why the hurricanes short out when they get to shore. And that was the basis for one of my plans to short out hurricanes. Back in the 1990s, something like that, working with the Russian scientists, one of the plans was to put extend the shoreline out electrically, and that would be done with buoys and electrical anchoring, etc., and then weather balloons up on electrical conductors, so you would provide a path to ground, because the water is an insulator, and so the when the storm comes in or the hurricane comes in, the first thing it does is it encounters that the ground, the beach basically, and starts to short out, and that's why all of the tornadoes form on the leading edge of the hurricanes as it makes landfall, and that's where a lot of the damage comes from. And people think it's hurricane winds when it's really not. It's tornadoes that are on that leading edge. They're not straight line winds. They're whirling winds, they're tornadoes. And they're formed when that hurricane reaches landfall. And on the eastern coast of Florida is one of the places where this occurs. Okay, so back to the idea that there is electrical activity going on. And all of this comes from the sun. The sun is more electrical than, I mean, it's purely electrical. The majority of energy that enters the Earth's atmosphere is electrical. It's not visual. And the idea that the sun shines down on the Earth and causes wind, and therefore that's the cause of our weather, is absurd. Absolutely absurd. If that were the only causal source of energy for planet Earth, we would have extremely bland weather. There would be no clouds. That's another point, is that the clouds form because of the vertical electric field. And you can do this. You can create cloud chambers in the laboratory. It's very easy, using an electric field. And so they're used in experimentation, because you can see, for example, cosmic rays as they pass through a vapor chamber that is used using electric fields to create the basically artificial clouding. They're called cloud chambers in physics. Very useful experimental devices. And so as a cosmic ray or some other activity goes on, electrical comes zipping through there, then it leaves a path, and it is something that can be recorded and used. You can understand the energy involved, etc. Okay, so let's look above the surface layer of the Earth, and we go up to about 60,000 feet. That's about 12 miles up, and that's the end of the troposphere. And so let's look into the stratosphere. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about all the different electrical effects that can now be observed and are being observed. And like I said, this guy was out in the middle of the Sonora Desert, I believe that's where it was, and took a photograph of a blue jet. It was like this flaring blue light up in the atmosphere above the storm clouds just going up into the sky. And he was probably, 100 miles away from the source. So the source was actually down below the horizon because of the curvature of the Earth. Okay, so here we go. And these are in the stratosphere. So this is the next, let's say 30 miles going up in the atmosphere. Troposphere is the first 12 miles. The next 30 miles is the stratosphere. And so one of the events that are the luminous events, transient luminous events, is called electron positron beam. Now, this is very interesting right out of the box, because whenever you have electron positron creation, we are talking extremely high energy activity to cause this to happen. And this is something that is natural in the atmosphere. I'll be talking about, like, for example, cosmic rays, relativistic protons, that are generated in the upper atmosphere. In the only place they were previously believed to be possible because of their high energy was in distant galactic nuclei, that some major process was going on. But here now you find them above thunderclouds on planet Earth with no real source. No real source. Where's the nova? Where's the extreme energy event that's causing this to happen? And it turns out that these are electrical events that are happening in the atmosphere all the time. Nobody ever imagined this. And I remember when the first sprites and elves and these other type of atmospheric phenomena were discovered, it was like, oh, look at that. And then the immediate explanation came out, which of course is beyond absurd, was that the electricity is shooting up from the clouds. It's shooting down below the clouds, and it's shooting up out of the clouds. And of course, absolutely absurd. That's not how electrical circuits work. So I'm going to quick read off a number of things here that occur in atmospheric electricity, and these are connecting up to the ionosphere and then out into outer space. And as I said, it's because the Earth is discharging the solar capacitor that all of this electrical activity is going on. And also we are in the solar wind, but it's the discharge of all of this that is causing these events. In fact, Earth has a comet tail, which is is incorrectly called a magnetic tail. So anyway, let me quick go through these. So there are sprites and elves, and these happen to be, an elf is a name, but it's, I think it has to do with what are known as fairy rings. Now, if you go to mycology, which is the study of fungus and mushrooms, there are things called fairy rings. And these have to do with elves and little people. Now, if you look at, for example, when I lived in New Orleans, I spent 2 years in New Orleans and other places in the tropics, but they have a type of mushroom that grows in New Orleans. They're, I believe they're poisonous. It's not something you would eat at all. But the way they start out is they start out growing in a small cluster. And then what happens is the nutrients are used up for that particular mushroom. And so then the next generation goes out in a ring around that, and then another ring around that. And see, these, so the root system of the mushrooms grows outwards in a ring. And these can get to be very big, like 50 feet across. It's a big ring of mushrooms. And these are called fairy rings. And they also occur in some of the northern climates based on different types of mushrooms. But they also, there are some mushrooms which glow in the dark. They have that property. And when you come upon these in the woods, it looks like little fairies dancing around because of the just the way the lighting is, etc. And maybe it's partly a trick of the eye, but anyway, this is related to elves and fairy rings and things like that. So anyway, the short story is that the elves are rings of light that occur, and especially above what are known as blue jets. There are halos. These are rings of light that occur high up in the mesosphere, close to the ionosphere. But why are these happening? These are magnetic effects. These are magnetic effects. And you also have things called ring currents around the North Pole and the South Pole when the auroras are occurring. Not only do the auroras occur in rings, but there's actually cross currents that occur between the positive and negative side of the ring, and these are called ring currents. And so all of these electrical effects are going on. I mentioned before, I'll just talk a little in detail about this. The South China Sea has an anomaly. And what's going on there? There's a lot of current that comes down from the atmosphere into the South China Sea. And I believe it's because it's so shallow there. A lot of people don't understand. There's a lot of shipping in the South China Sea. And that's the old location of Atlantis. Now, Atlantis, I talk about this in my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And so there's a tremendous amount of electricity that from atmospheric electricity that connects to the Earth there because it's extremely shallow. And the shipping in those regions has a very difficult time because there's still bogs that are floating up. This is grass bogs that float up from the old continent of Atlantis, which is right down there, you know, very short distance under the water in the South China Sea. And these bogs of grass are floating up from underneath the surface of the South China Sea. And they get caught in the propellers of the ships, these big ocean-going ships. So it's a major problem, but that's what's going on. And Atlantis simply slid under the ocean one day, and it was probably a slewing event, and I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to repeat it here. Tonight I'm talking about electricity. In my book, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, which I think was published in probably around 2004 or something like that, it was the next real book after my Atlantis to Tesla book, but they talk about LEBs, local electrical batteries, and I identify 17 of them that are in the low Earth region or low Earth orbit region around Earth. And these are electrical effects where there's a differential. There's a charge differential because of vortex activity and other types of activity of electrical currents passing by Earth that cause the local electrical batteries. So there's a differentiation of charge, which causes a battery. It's like a capacitive effect. There's other effects, for example, at very high noon. There are effects that I was talking about this a number of weeks ago, that there's a water effect that occurs high in the atmosphere and is always at that point closest to the sun in the atmosphere at high noon. Now, there's a similar effect on the planet Venus, that on the sunward side of Venus, there's a high concentration of X-rays. You can see the X-ray pattern. And so what's going on there? The electrons coming in from the sunward side, because Venus, like all the planets, is discharging the solar capacitor. And so the electron beam, which is a pinched electron sheet that's coming from the sun, discharging to the planet, which is still acting like a comet, Venus, and creating Bremsstrahlung X-rays. These are breaking. Bremsstrahlung is a German word meaning breaking X-rays. In other words, as the electrons slow down, they create X-rays, which is the effect that's visible. It's not to the naked eye, but to equipment that's sensitive. In X-rays, you can see this cloud of X-ray generation on the sunward side of Venus. Same thing happens on Earth, although we have a protective magnetic field, which pushes that outwards about 35,000 miles to the sunward side of Earth. Back in the 1980s, a guy named Lou Frank, he was working at the University of Iowa, a physicist, and what he did is he put some ultraviolet sensing equipment sensitive to water up in the upper atmosphere, and he already knew that these the micro water phenomenon were occurring up in the Earth's upper atmosphere. And so he put equipment on a ultraviolet satellite, an Explorer satellite, looking down on planet Earth, and the Earth is lighting up all the time with water, and it's large patches of water up in the Earth's upper atmosphere. And where do these come from? Well, I have a picture in my weather book. It's kind of like a leech-like looking attachment of plasma that attaches to the upper surface of the Earth. And these are effects that then trickle down through the atmosphere, through the mesosphere and the stratosphere, and down to the cloud systems, and causes electrical storms on Earth. Just another one of the extensions of the electrical circuit of the solar system. Okay, so other effects. Here's a very interesting one, volcanic plumes. The lightning, now, if you look at my poster that's on my webpage, and you can buy it, but you can also just see the pictures. So you go to the webpage, sales page, and there's the poster, the three poster set. But anyway, on one of the posters, one of the more colorful poster, there are pictures of volcanoes, and these were South American volcanoes, where the lightning was shooting out of the plume that was above the volcanoes, once again proving that the electrical generation is not within the clouds. The clouds are actually protecting that region and providing a shield, but the plume above these, just massive plumes above these volcanoes that were erupting in South America, the lightning is coming out on all sides. And that's an indicator that the lightning generation, the electrical generation, is coming from beyond. In other words, upwards in the atmosphere. And there was an interesting anecdote. I was at a American Geophysical Union meeting one time, and a group of graduate students had gathered around me. And they were looking at my poster and talking about it. And, you know, this is the first time they had been exposed anything like this. And here you have graduate physics students and astrophysics and space science and astronomy students standing there talking to me. They had no idea that any of this existed because they were kept in the dark by their stupid professors. And so I'm talking to them, and they're understanding this from a physics electrical point of view. And their professor walks up, and he's a NASA Joe, NASA Bozo. And he starts confronting me, like very angry. He says, well, this is electricity is generated within the plume of the cloud because of tumultuous activity. And the student turns around to him and says, yeah, but it's coming out the sides. Understanding fully that if you had electricity generated within the plume, it would discharge within the plume. And the student immediately knew and turned to his professor, and his professor got really mad and made them all leave. That's modern education, boys and girls. These guys are paying a lot of money to be stupid. But this student immediately understood what I was talking about. But his professor would not let him go down that rabbit hole at all. Okay, so how about tornadoes above volcanoes? Something more strange. And also at night you can see these above tornadoes. I have a picture of one in my Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book. It's a picture of, I don't know, it was Mount Vesuvius, I think, at night, with a tornado coming out of it that's electrical and discharging like electricity out of the tornado that's above the crater of this volcano. A tornado coming out. And then there's another picture on a very clear blue day. There's another Italian volcano, and that, I don't know, might be Vesuvius also. a tornado coming right out the top of the volcano on a clear blue sky day, up there where there's no clouds, not a cloud in sight, certainly no tumultuous clouds rubbing together to cause vortices in the atmosphere. No, nothing. Tornadoes on the sun. This was one of the things that the Russian scientists became very interested in my work back in the 1995 era. I was working with these scientists from the University of Novosibirsk, and one of the things they did not understand, which they had just discovered, was the tornadoes racing across the surface of the sun. And so when my work was presented to them and we did the translations into Russian, they realized right away that I was right on, 100% correct, that these were the electrical effects, and the tornadoes were driven by electrical currents. And that would be the same case on Earth, that the tornadoes are very electrical. In fact, people see them at night. There have been people that have been caught below volcanoes, and they look up in a tornado, and it's pure lightning inside. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to continue this discussion next week on my show, because this is all leading to the electric highways to the stars, and so electrical magnetic space propulsion systems, etc. So in the last minute here, I just want to remind you, the sale on my webpage is going away tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, Friday night, midnight, will be the 10% sale. It's on all the products, will go away, and the coupon code JMCC for an additional 10% off on anything you buy on the page. It's at checkout. You put in that coupon code for another additional 10% off, and people are taking advantage of this. I would recommend that you do also. And so the webpage is jmccwaterfilters.com. This is not on my main JMCC SCI, the science page. This is on the water filter page, that there's a 10% discount. And by the way, my education package, etc., there's discounts on that too, on the jmccsci.com webpage. But the 10% sale plus the coupon code is on the jmccwaterfilters.com page. You can also get there from the jmccsci.com page. At the top, it says JMCC Water Filters. Just click on that. You go directly to the new spiffy WordPress water filters sales page and information page. But I recommend that you get a whole house water filter at 20% off. You're never going to find a deal like this. Pick up some extra filter elements that can be purchased with it, and the UV optional, or UV light, that's the final filter for bacteria and viruses. All of this on my webpage. And that sale is ending tomorrow night. Once again, the coupon code JM as in Mary CC at checkout, that's on the water filter sales page. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.